This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Alan Carl,
Dan Werchter,
and I'm Stuart Burks.
Now, Alan, we've been talking about your time with K-Force in Korea. Could you tell me a bit more about how you coped with the extreme cold?
No, we just had to put up with the cold. I'd open my little chest of drawers with all the dental instruments in, and I put my hand down and all stick to my hand. That was original, yes.
Yep.
We got used to it though.
Was it, if you were doing something painful and it was very cold, no, did that make it easier?
No, we had local anaesthetic, but we had to throw a lot of it out because it froze solid and turned brown. They're in little capsules. No, we used, and my dental mechanic would get a box of these capsules and put it at the bottom of his sleeping bag every night to keep them keep them warm.
Yeah.
Yes. But, we weren't primitive. We used local anaesthetic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And how were your drills powered? Is that a foot-powered drill?
Foot engine.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we didn't have any power.
And even lighting then, that would just be...
Lighting was difficult. In my kit there was a headlamp, battery ridden, but I couldn't use it really. So we used to pitch the tent where it was easier with the light.
You mean the angle of that you turn the tent so the light will come in?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you have a photo there where the sun's shining at the front of the tent and you do the treatment there.
Yes,
I see. Yeah.
That's snow.
Yes, all the snow in the background, it does look rather cool.
It must have affected the dexterity of your fingers, the cold.
Oh, yes. Yes. That was my dental mechanic working on that side. Me there. You'd notice he's got a lathe with a leather strap that goes down to a hinged couple of blocks.
Like a sewing machine.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, and I've got the sewing machine here.
Yep.
And later on, originally we had a 1,500 weight truck, which we couldn't work on the back on, you couldn't stand. Mm-hmm. But later we got a 3-ton and had that kitted out, which was much more comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Could you do all the same things as you would have done in New Zealand? The same treatments?
Yes, but we didn't do orthodontics.
Yeah.
We didn't straighten teeth.
Yeah.
Yes, fillings, extractions, and made dentures.
And you've one photo.
There's my dental mechanic working there.
Ah, yes, that's a...
Yes, you see, he's got a lathe.
Yes.
There, hand lathe.
Ah, okay.
With a leather belt that goes down a couple of blocks.
So he can use his foot to
That's power. Right. Yes.
Okay. And you're treating a Korean?
Oh, this was quite unusual, actually. This Korean, those two arrived to see the medical officer. And our regimental medical officer. But she had a swollen jaw, and I extracted the tooth for her, for which she was very grateful. with local anaesthetic.
Yes.
You went too prompt.
Yeah. Okay. So did
and
you?
That only happened once. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a very keen photographer who had to photograph it.
Yeah. No. Oh, very good. So did you find that your experience there shaped what you did back in New Zealand at all?
Well, it was a bit different coming back to New Zealand with the electric power and drills and that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But you've been used to, I suppose, used to a lot of improvisation.
My foot was still going like this for quite a while.
Yes.
Yes, you have to improvise. You see me working in a tent there in a truck.
Yeah.
But when we first arrived there, at the camp we were staying at, it was an old Korean house. And we worked in there for a week before we moved north.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. That saved putting a tent up.
Yes. Yeah. So being attached to the unit, did you feel part of that whole unit?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. Of course, that was because I knew all the officers from the.
Yeah.
From Bayuru, 3 months, 4 months there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes. Yes. They accepted me.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were then involved in the RSA when you came out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yes, I'm still in the RSA. And the officers' club here.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Was that a big social experience? There's a lot of camaraderie because of the people serving together?
In the officers' club here, there was only one other who'd been to Korea.
Okay.
Some had been to Malaysia.
Yeah.
Some haven't been overseas. But there was only one other officer who was in Korea, but he was some years later.
Okay.
Yes.
So when you joined, it would have been mainly people from World War II, would it, in the RSA? There would have been mainly sort of World War II return servicemen that were there when you first joined the RSA.
Yes.
Yeah.
The 2IC of the regiment, second command, he was a regular officer who later became head of defence in New Zealand and got a knighthood, Richard Webb. But it was a territorial officer who was commanding officer of the regiment.
Yeah.
Yes, who'd served in the Second World War in the artillery, General John Moody. He was the boss of the regiment.
Yeah. So were you aware of sort of differences in, you know, so-and-so is a World War II veteran, so-and-so is a Korean War veteran? Were there differences?
No.
Just the same.
No.
Yeah. And the experience in terms?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I had to be careful with me. I was a dentist after all. They might end up in my chair.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, true.
Treated me very carefully.
Yeah. So then, So then, in the RSA later on, there would have been those who'd been in Vietnam as well, presumably.
Yes, yeah. Not many.
No.
Okay. Quietly, yes. A few had been to Malaysia too.
Oh yeah.
At our local. Yes. And some who haven't been overseas, officers who haven't been overseas.
Yeah.
Territorial and regular.
Yeah, I think the RSA was struggling because of aging membership and how to survive.
Yes.
But did you say there's been some talk about people from different
war situations, their experiences were quite different. And so some of them had great difficulty settling back into New Zealand.
It took a while to get back.
Yeah.
I was a resident dentist of Wellington Hospital for 18 months, with a big crowd there, of course. A dental school, a big crowd. And then overseas with a big crowd. Then I arrived home in Palmerston North. I didn't know anybody but my father.
That took
a bit of getting used to.
Did you feel so out of step with other people because of the different experiences?
No, I don't think so. In fact, most of them I don't think knew anything about Korean.
Yeah.
It was only a small war compared to
the I know they say often people who serve, they don't talk much about their experiences. Was that what you found? Some people weren't interested?
Well, some of them, yes, people weren't really interested. They had no reason to be, really. They could see it all in the films and the picture theatre. That's when I first saw the Korean War. I was at the Regent Theatre.
Yeah, you mean the documentaries or the fictional films?
Yes, documentaries, yes.
And having been there, what did you think? Did you think the documentaries were realistic?
Oh, yes.
Okay. What about the political aspect of it? You went just... Or here's a chance for you to experience that, or...
I just went for the adventure, really.
Yeah.
To be honest,
I think most
of the volunteers did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. We didn't know anything about Korea. Nobody knew anything about Korea.
Yeah. And the politics behind it. There was no mention of that.
No.
What's about attitude to the other side then? To the North Koreans and the Chinese, I suppose. You just didn't think of it, you just got to fire the guns.
Yes, they were the enemy, of course.
Yeah.
There were photographs of when the armistice was signed, of New Zealand troops shaking hands with the Chinese out on the field.
Yes. So it was you just were serving out of duty and you're told to do that, and that's it?
Yes.
So what was the... I know with Vietnam War and so on, the idea of the domino theory, we've got to protect against communist incursion. Was there any of that with the Korean War?
I think originally, yes.
So...
Yes, it was... The North Koreans wanted to take over the whole peninsula. It had been divided in 1945 after the Second World War. Divided almost on the 38th parallel. And the Russians and the Chinese were up top and the United Nations down below. And the North Koreans wanted to take over the whole lot. They weren't satisfied with this and they started the war. With the help of Russia and China.
And have you followed the situation in Korea with any interest ever since? Have you kept your eye on what's going on?
I've seen the photograph of the man with the funny haircut. But it's still a stalemate, really.
So could it, from what you saw, well, you would have really only, all you would have seen of South Korea then was just travelling through and seeing lots of refugees and that's it. So,
Yes, the place was, the Chinese had gone right down almost to Busan originally.
Yes.
And they gradually pushed back up.
So that was the stage you came.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, we had the Navy doing their job too.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. So what about the Air Force at that stage? Did you was there much sort of Air Force support for the infantry?
No. There was a bit of American support there once, I think, yeah. I don't remember seeing any planes going up.
Yeah. So you wouldn't. So even with the combat situation, it was just artillery backing up the infantry.
The infantry, and yes.
Tanks and so on? Would yeah. there be mechanized?
There were tanks too, yes. Hmm. It was a difficult country,
yeah.
especially for tanks. It was very hilly.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So it was mainly relying on infantry?
Yes.
And then when it was dug in, was it trench-type warfare?
When yes, it was at stage,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, holding the various hills, 3-5-3, and yes, trenches, yeah, definitely.
Mm.
Infantry mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they would have been actually in worse conditions than,
oh, yeah.
than the artillery.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had their own dentists who were way up front as well, didn't
there was a British dental unit we got to know, and there was an Australian dental unit, dental section, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And they would be up
and
with
Canadian.
The, yeah, and they'd be up with the troops as well, right? At the front, or a bit further back.
A little bit further back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you say you were with an artillery unit,
yes.
but they had obviously there was a small dental unit, there'd be the medical unit, there'd be the
yes.
cooks. The,
oh, the, oh, yes, artillery, oh, yes,
yeah.
artillery had cooks. And the signalers, too.
Okay.
Yes.
So about what proportion would be the actual artillerymen with the guns out of the whole unit?
I suppose about 80%.
Oh, okay. That's,
yes, I should think. Yes,
okay. So then there'd be separate units that would get resupplying you all and
yes.
And so.
Yes, it was the Army Service Corps.
Yeah.
They came over. We had a small Army Service Corps unit went with us.
Mm-hmm.
Very small one. And then later on, and they were attached when they came to Korea to a British Army Service Corps.
Yeah.
And later on, New Zealand decided to send over a full Army Transport Service Corps unit
yeah.
of about 500 men.
Okay.
The 10th Transport Company. Yes.
I used to
now and then go down to them, stay a few nights in their tent, treat their personnel,
yeah.
then go back to the regiment, yes.
Okay. So would they be there and essentially attached to the artillery, giving them supplies?
Or? Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did they
try? Taking up ammunition. And
yeah. Okay. Did they try to keep the nationalities all sort of working on the... So New Zealanders supplying New Zealanders and... British supplying British, or was there much of a mixture?
I think it was a mixture, really.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What about equipment? Were you using the same equipment? The artillery, were they using the same things as the British or the Americans? Or
you mean their guns?
The guns, yeah.
Well, the guns, 25-pounder guns.
Yeah.
They'd been used in the Second World War.
Okay.
Some of them proved it too.
Yeah.
So the... the LAD light aids attachment we had with us, who were with the regiment all the time, they looked after, repaired the guns, looked after them. And,
So were these the same as the ones used by the British or by the Americans?
They'd be the same used by the British, I think, yeah,
okay.
25-pounders.
Yeah.
But the Americans had the... mainly the bigger guns.
Okay, yeah.
They were called the Persuaders.
Yeah.
You could hear them going over with a hell of a row.
So they'd be another 10 miles back from you.
Several miles back.
Yeah. Did you say several or seven?
Or be oh, several.
Several, yeah, five. Yeah.
And they made a terrific row.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
their range was much more than the 25 pounds.
So how would when things were stable, you'd have infantry in the front line, and maybe some mechanized units fairly far forward.
Yes.
Your guns would be just a few miles back, and two or three miles back. The Americans behind that. Were there extra lines? So if there was a breakthrough, there's another line of infantry defense about where you were or behind you, or once there's a breakthrough, they'd broken through.
They'd broken through.
Yeah. Okay. So how deep overall was the...
There was at Cape Yong, where the main battle was, the Chinese broke through, and yeah. We were moving about every 20 minutes or so, about 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So did that mean they actually had time to stop and fire, or they were just...
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pull back, fire. But so how would they count if it was just a breakthrough with a reserve infantry to come in and try and block the gap? Or?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. And no already prepared positions for them to move into that.
No, not if they're forced back. No.
Yeah, okay.
They'd stop.
Yes.
Probably digging for a while.
So what did that feel like? Was it a very worrying time? You think you could be...
Well, we had our moments of tension.
Overall, we were quite good. But was it the idea in the heat of battle, then you just, this is it, and it's exciting, and you just got to do it, or... Where you think, heck, I wish I wasn't here.
It was during the Battle of the Cap Yong when we retreated. That was the exciting part, of course.
Yeah. So afterwards, nothing quite like that, but people say if you're in that situation, appreciate it because it's a rare life experience. Was that your feeling?
Especially moving back as when the Chinese broke through during the Cap Yong War, the Cap Yong battle. And a lot of it was at night time, of course, there's no street lights.
Yes.
Yeah. That excited.
Yeah. And no Air Force involved?
Not when. I think originally it's some American Air Force.
Okay.
So did that fulfill your sense of adventure?
Yes, I think so.
You had enough by the time you got back to New Zealand.
Yes, things were pretty boring, I think.
Was that satisfying to be quiet and boring? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And have you ever gone back to Korea?
Yes, I went back in 1997.
Yep.
And hardly knew the place.
Oh, yeah.
They'd really gone ahead there. Yeah. Yes, I had 10 days. The chap who took my place and I went over there and we were treated to... looked after by the Korean Army Dental Corps. Yes.
So you're invited over to
Korea. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Had everything paid for us by the Koreans. They're a very grateful race. Even now, they keep on doing things for countries that help them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're great people there because they've been through a hell of a time.
Yes.
Be under the Japs since 1910 to 1945, and there's always war being. You know.
And you were impressed with the country? You were impressed with the country?
With what they went back? Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, it's amazing what they'd rebuilt. And
You got the photo from 1995?
Yes, that's on the demarcation zone.
And lots of people with lots of brass on their hats.
These are Air Force, Navy, Army, Navy, dentist.
Okay, and you're in the middle of them.
Yes.
So they made you very welcome.
Very, very welcome,
very
yes.
Nice. Yeah. So how do you feel you're viewed in New Zealand as a Korean War veteran?
Oh, I get quite a good time, actually. Especially on Anzac Day.
Yes.
Armistice Day.
So is it something that now people are interested in? They talk about?
Yes, yes, especially the younger people. Except for this year, on Anzac Day, I lay a wreath at the Boys' High School. Also I lay a wreath at the Dawn Parade in town on Anzac Day. It didn't happen this year, of course.
That was all the Stanyatar gates.
Would you have any advice for young people now if the situation arose that led you to volunteer for Korea?
No, I'll leave it up to them.
So it'd be
a
conscience decision.
Yes. If they want the adventure, well, there you are.
Were there any casualties in your unit then? Or in the artillery unit?
Oh, there were about, I think there were 41 killed altogether.
Okay.
I thought there was about 35, but I see there's about 41 or who died over there anyway.
So what was the reaction of the other...
The first two, when we were moving north in January 1951 in convoy, then two blokes went missing. A jeep carrying a sergeant major and a driver went missing from the convoy. This is in January, 1951. And so a jeep and an officer went back to see where this was, and they'd been overtaken by guerrillas and killed on the side of the road.
Yeah.
That was our first casualties. Yes.
So what was the reaction to that?
Oh, well, everybody had his own reaction. We knew we were in a war then.
Yes.
One was from Palmerston North, actually.
Okay.
McDonald. They had the commercial hotel there. Commercial Hotel, McDonald's. He was the first.
And you said young people are very interested now. What questions do they ask you?
Well, I think as a young person, I was interested in my older brother went to the Second World War. And of course, First World War veterans were all interested in what happened and what you did. And the young people.
So they just said, "What did you do there? What
was
it like?
What was it like? And where did you go? And how many did you kill? Drill.
Okay, so do you get invited to speak about your war experiences in schools? Or?
I had been, but I avoid it as much as possible.
Yeah.
I'm not a natural speaker.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the Kiwi Fruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.